The Art of Leadership Network.
Just praying together, just playing together, that has gotten us just incredible returns.
Hey, podcasters. Welcome to Leaders in Living Rooms by CDF Capital. I'm your host, Sean Morgan, bringing you access and insights to leaders and their stories. Wow, everybody, we've got Dave Dummett on the show today, and I've known Dave for a long time, probably 8 or 9 years, and I'm so thankful that we get a chance to tell part of this story. And I say part of this story because it's just the beginning, but I have a profound respect for Dave and the leadership gifting that he has, his call as a pastor, obviously planting a church first, and then what most of you know him for is being the lead pastor that followed Bill Hybels at Willow Creek Church. And he gives us some great insight in an age where a lot of people are listening to failure stories on the internet and on podcasts and talking a lot about that. I hope that this story will encourage many of you because Dave's the real deal. He has stepped in here. This is a spiritual warfare situation where there was an iconic church that was in deep decline. And Dave talks about this was a turnaround situation at Willow, and God has called him there. He's leading well there, but it's a hard row. It takes a lot out of a leader and a leadership team, but it's clear that God's in this work. He talks about some of the hard things in the transition with Willow. He talks about some ways that staff health and taking time spiritually to grow as a staff on Wednesdays through their chapel is helping them right the ship. And I just appreciate the straight up story, getting insight to some of the heavy things and being able to cheer Dave on. So as you listen to this, I hope it will encourage you. And I hope you'll take time either now, during, or at the end to pray for Willow. Pray for what God is doing there and needs to continue to do, and specifically to lift Dave Dummett up in prayer. Before we dive into the episode, of course, if you're listening to our episodes, you know that we have a fantastic multi-year-long partner in Food for the Hungry, and we're just overjoyed with their work and the partnership with them that we have, and the number of our listeners and our listener churches that have reached out to us saying they've started the conversation about a partnership with Food for the Hungry. And yeah, we're probably headed into a recession. We've got incredible highs of inflation right now, but I'll tell you what, your people want to give toward missions, and you can find no better partner than Food for the Hungry. Hit them up, fh.org, or if you're a church looking for church partnerships, it's fh.org/churches. I honestly believe it will benefit your overall giving in a church when you start a formal partnership with a missions organization like Food for the Hungry. Without any more on that, I will shift gears into the interview. Here we go with Dave Dummett.
All right, podcasters, welcoming Dave Dummett, church planter and now transitions leader at Willow Creek Community Church. Dave, we're so honored, just that you would say yes to something like this, honored for your time and, of course, the wisdom and insight that we'll be able to tap into. So thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, wisdom and insight. You are setting the bar high, my friend, but we'll do everything we can. I'm honored to be on here. Thank you so much. I've heard a couple of the podcasts and seen some of your guests, and it's just what you are adding to the kingdom, to the conversation. It is awesome. And so thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah. Well, you're stewarding a great kingdom work there in a neat part of the country, but obviously with a church that is very well known. And in an era where there's a lot of people listening to podcasts about how people have not done well in ministry, I love stewarding these stories that aren't easy stories. Transition, there is no church that hasn't had an easy transition. There have been some that have gone pretty well, none that I'm aware of that have gone perfectly, but it's a lot of hard work. I think it's also extraordinarily rewarding. And so I love getting to tell these stories that balance that out. And man, you've been on the back of my mind and on my radar as man at the right time, I would love to just have some insight from you. And who knows, maybe we'll be able to do it over the years a few more times. But Dave, I knew you back when you weren't a church planter, because the church was pretty mature at that point in time. But you had planted a church in Michigan. We had a mutual friend that was a congregation member at your church, and you and I got connected. So just give us an idea. Everybody, I think, knows the name Willow. Most people know who you are, and they know the name Dave Dummett, but they might not know a lot about you. So where did you grow up? How did you get shaped as an adult and then called into ministry and end up church planting in Michigan?
Oh, man. Well, that's a story. Well, I grew up in Cincinnati. It's the, you know, the sophistication of the North and the charm of the South all rolled up into one perfect city. And I love Cincinnati Skyline Chili and Grater's Ice Cream and King's Island. I loved it. My parents brought me to church when I was a kid. I was in the bell choir. I mean, back when the churches had that, like it was.
Oh yeah. The white gloves.
Oh my goodness. I got in it because there was a girl in it. So I was, that's why.
All right, thanks for keeping it real.
Yeah, that's the truth. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing, felt board stories on Sunday school. I learned about Noah and the Ark with felt board stories and everything. But, man, Jesus just rocked my world through high school and college. And I just really felt like the greatest contribution I could have with my life would be to try and do everything I can to expand the kingdom, to grow the kingdom, to bring heaven to earth and as many folks from earth to heaven, you know? And, so I went to, it's funny because I went to Catholic high school, then I went to Wheaton College, then I went to Asbury Seminary. So, you know, it's kind of, I'm a theological mutt. Like I've just got all kinds of stuff going on. And then ended up doing a couple of years in worship ministry, which was a blast. And then, kind of went home, to Northern Kentucky, which is basically Southern Cincinnati, if you know that region at all.
Yes.
And I did a young adult ministry, which was again, super fun. And then it was in 2004 that we left there and went up and we planted 242 Community Church in 2005.
So you said we, so who was part of that plant? Were you just speaking of your family, or were you speaking of a team, or something that was it planted out of a movement or a church?
Yeah. So, well, there was a team. My wife and I, we had 21 people actually move from out of state. We were part of that young adult ministry.
Wow. Yeah.
A lot of them were, you know, graduating from college, or they had entry-level jobs because they were young adults and jobs that they could move. And so they were excited about moving. We'd connected with Dave Ferguson and Community Christian Church. Mm-hmm. And so I went and did a residency there for, I think it was 5 months. And while we were there, we found there was a family that was from the area that in Michigan that we were going to plant. So they came with us. We had another family that came up from North Carolina. So ended up being about 21 people that moved from out of state to launch the church. And then there were a few different organizations that came together, a couple of churches, there were a couple of church planting organizations that kind of all got together. But the story that needs to be told, I believe, is Bob. Bob Smith was a police officer in Brighton, Michigan. And Bob had seen his cousin launch a church in North Carolina. And Bob was saying, man, we need a church for people who don't like to go to church, you know, an externally focused church here in Brighton, Michigan. And so Bob the cop basically printed up a pamphlet on his home computer, like his Lexmark printer. You remember these? Mm-hmm. And went down to what is now the Exponential Conference, like before it was called the Exponential Conference, on his own dime. And he walked around and said, are you a pastor? Are you a church planter? Would you be interested in planting a church in Michigan? And Bob was the one that really got some of those early commitments financially. Bob was the one that got the thing started. And, you know, what he'd say is, well, I'm just a cop. But that story needs to be told, because there are a lot of, you know, just a teachers, just a bankers, just a, you know, Christ followers who may not be pastors, but man, they can have incredible impact for the kingdom. And so, you know, Bob is really the reason that, you know, 10,000 plus people get together for church in Michigan because of Bob. 242 was planted.
Yeah, that's, well, I love that story so much. You know, Bob the champion, right? He championed this when it was a nascent inception of an idea. And it just speaks to me, you know, I know more about transitions leadership, even though I've been part of a couple. I ministered at a church plant in Northern California and grew up in a church plant in Colorado Springs with a great church that's still there. And, you know, you have those unsung heroes, but there's this spiritual dimension. Like, that just doesn't happen in normal everyday life for somebody to just be completely sold out for something that is so selfless. And love the story of Bob, man. That's really cool. Thanks for sharing that.
For sure.
Yeah. So you do this, right? You move, you go to a different part of the country. You root your family there. You have a great season of leadership. But one of the things that I do when I work with transitions leaders, some of them are already transitioned, but a lot of them are not, and they're in that phase. And I hear from them a lot of times, like, help me decide. And I always tell them, I can't help you decide, but I can help you change your mind about what you get to decide on, and then what you have to discern God is ordaining and orchestrating. Tell us about that as you got to a season there where God was clearly moving in your heart and creating an openness for, I know the church well enough. There was always a next at the church. There was always something that the church needed to step toward, but then you had to start wrestling with that thought of my next might not be the next at 242 as well. So talk us through a piece of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the time, when Willow reached out, I said no immediately. And the reason is because, you know, we were, everything was going really well at 242, kind of, you know, we were growing. We had just launched a couple new campuses. That was going well. I was having so much fun. And everything was really, really healthy. And my wife and I, whenever we would get those kinds of phone calls, hey, would you be interested in, or would you consider, we would try to always run it through the grid or the question, the criteria of, we got one life to invest. You know, we have so many years, and how can we invest our life so that it can have the greatest kingdom impact possible, assuming that God's going to bless it, right? So we kind of have that positive faith filled, like, if God's going to bless this, no matter what, man, where could we have the greatest impact possible? And the truth is, when Willow called, I said no right away, because I'm going, you know, at 242, we had momentum and health. So it was growing and it was healthy. And, you know, I'd heard, I wasn't close to it, but I'd heard what was going on at Willow, just like, you know, kind of everybody else in the country. And I'm going, you know, that's decline and dysfunction. And I just was not interested. And the truth is, like, when they asked me to really consider it, I thought, here's a couple things. One is that new leadership is like the elders. They're probably going to overcorrect and micromanage that new leader. And I thought, oh my goodness. Like, I'm a church planter. like, we don't like to be micromanaged. And I thought, I just don't think I'd thrive in that kind of an environment. And, you know, the second thing is, because Willow was going through such trauma, I thought, you know, the best person to serve Willow in that season is somebody with a lot of empathy and pastoral gifts. And I you know, I'd never been accused of having too much empathy. Let's just say. So,
can you and me both?
Yeah. So I just said, I just don't think I'm the right person. And so I said no pretty quickly. And honestly, I put my head on the pillow at night and I didn't even give it a second thought. I mean, guys, I really didn't. And then they called back about 6 months later and asked me again, asked me to pray about it. And that's always the thing. That's always the kicker, right? Would you pray about it? Because how do you, you know, that's your first yes.
No,
you,
I'm not praying yes. about it.
So I said, yes, I'll pray about it. And I'll call you back in a few days. And I ended up calling, you know, some mentors in running my ideas past them and kind of say, this is kind of what I think. And they really just affirmed what I said. They were like, Dave, yes. I mean, the reasons you said no, you, yeah, man. I mean, that's probably going to be what it's like. And so I said no again. And it really was a year. Like, it was a year after the first time they talked to me, that they called again and they said, hey, listen, you know, you've been real upfront and honest with us. But we really would love for you to consider this. I think they'd gotten it down to a couple of candidates and then the elders couldn't agree. And so they said, so we're kind of back at square one and we're reaching out to you. And so I took it to my wife and I said, Rachel, here's the thing. They're calling again. And she said, well, have you ever thought, like, the reason you're saying no, because 242 is like healthy and growing and everything's good. So maybe that's the very reason that God would have us consider this. Maybe God wants you to leave 242, us to leave 242, and it's growing and healthy. And assuming that it goes well at Willow and that we can help, now you have two growing churches. And she said that, and it was the first time I felt like it just made me look at it differently. And I don't know, you know, Sean, if you've ever like heard the audible voice of the Holy Spirit, it sounds a lot like my wife. So if you ever want to hear it, just call her up. But she said that, and I was just like, okay. So that was literally when I had one conversation with the people at Willow. It was the first, like, mm-hmm. up until that point, it had been done through a search firm. And so I said, I'll have one conversation, which led to two, which led to five, which led to moving my family to Chicago.
Get a lot of peace during that? Like, did God grant peace? And if so, is it more toward the front or more toward the backside of that?
That's a great question. I remember when I moved to Michigan to plant a church, I thought that was scary. I thought leaving a paycheck, you know, Cincinnati was my hometown. I had grandparents, you know, my parents were there, so I had free babysitting. And to move to Michigan where I knew no one and it was cold, and I thought that was scary. And I kept looking for a big sign from God, you know, the fleece moments or the writing on the wall or, you know, something.
Yeah.
You know, I never got it at 242. It was just, we kept putting one foot in front of the other. We kept praying through what is the next right thing. And I'm sure we didn't always get that right, but that's what we tried to do. And, you know, next thing I know, like 242 is just booming. And I mean, the first year, the second year, the third year, I always thought like we would go there and in this little town, it would grow to 300, 400 people. And then, you know, some mega church somewhere would see that I've, you know, and they'd ask me to be on their staff. And that would have been like my dream. And yet God just continued to surprise us in Michigan. But your point to your question, all along the way, I never felt this huge, you know, clear call. It just felt like affirmation after affirmation. I would say the exact same thing with Willow. Mm-hmm. You know, every step along the way, you can just, it's easier to see God's hand as I look backwards than, you know, in the moment.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So outside set of eyes looking in, I'd love you to talk through just a couple of opportunities you saw. And you kind of mentioned a couple about the pendulum swing of micromanagement and stuff like that. But what would be the salient challenges you saw from the outside? Because I'm going to ask the same question again from the inside. You know, after you got there a few months and rolled up your sleeves, the same type of thing, opportunities and challenges. So I'd love to have some insight there.
Sure. Hey, can I push pause, go back to the last question?
Of course, yeah.
Is that okay? Because we talked a little bit about the call, and I didn't say this, and you don't have to use it, but I thought this might be encouraging to people. And that was just this. You know, as soon as people heard that I was going to Willow, that a new thing was happening in my life, you know, a lot of people would ask, are you excited? Are you excited? And I thought that was really interesting because I don't think I was all that excited. And I felt like something was wrong, you know, because the truth is I was a little bit scared and a little bit, you know, it was very sobering. Same thing when I moved to Michigan, like it was very sobering. And, you know, it wasn't until probably 3 or 4 months ago and someone was talking to me about the calls that people had in Scripture and how many times that, you know, God called somebody and they went, yes, we're going to bigger and better and more comfortable and more money and more all these kinds of things. Like that was very rarely what God called people to in Scripture. I mean, you look at Abraham, I want you to get up and leave what you know. And oh, by the way, I'm not even going to tell you where I'm going, where you're going. Moses is in a burning, you know, looking at a burning bush and trying to figure out what is going on. And you're going to go back to Pharaoh. I mean, there's just so many calls in Scripture where the call was clear, but it wasn't, you know, something that they were excited about. And I think that was really kind of how we felt too. And then the other thing I would just share with you, kind of looking back, did God affirm the call? One of the big things that have been really encouraging to me and giving me confidence in the call is the fact that I see that as God is calling me, he's calling others as well. Like I told you the story about my wife, but you know, since I've been here, the number of people that have said, man, we feel called to help. I mean, it's as if God put out this, just rang the bell and said, hey, we need to import some amazing culture from amazing churches. And I look at our executive team, people from Saddleback, people from Mariners, North Point, Central in Vegas, just a Community Christian, Dave Ferguson's church in Chicago. It's just some amazing leaders. And like every time that happened, one of those people said yes, I went, you know, that's a confirmation of God's call. Like he's calling other people. If he's calling you, he's going to call everybody you need to succeed. And I think I'm seeing that more and more and more. So,
yeah, that's beautiful. And it reminds me of your Bob Smith story. He had a call to step up and do certain things. And I remember somebody told me, I can't remember how long ago it was. I was probably a teenager, but they said, you know, the angel of the Lord showed up to Mary and she was afraid. And most people think that she was scared of the angel, but I think Mary was afraid because she knew her Bible and she knew her life was about to change what happened. So, you know, she wasn't excited. She was afraid, right? There's apprehension. The call was very clear, but that's different than excitement and all those other things. You can take joy and have peace that God's in it and at the same time be scared out of your mind because you've got to go and do. you've got to go to the land you don't yet know. So that's brilliant. I think that's a really good ad. So thanks for sharing that piece for sure.
Thanks.
Okay. So opportunities and challenges from your viewpoint at that point in time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say from like an opportunity standpoint, I mean, I'm going to say things that everybody knows, like Willow was a globally influential church. You've got the global leadership network. I mean, what the amount of leadership culture that gets exported from this building around the world it's an incredible opportunity to feel like, man, could I serve that? Could I help with that? Could I learn, you know, from that? And you know, the opportunity to grow as a leader because you're around so many great leaders. So that was a huge opportunity. Willow's got a care center here. You know, shout out to really was the brainchild of Heather Larson, who was lead pastor before me. It was really her brainchild. And I walk into this, when I give tours of this building, that is always the highlight. I always save it for last because the amount of work, care, community outreach, the way that it's done, the number of of volunteer engagement. I mean, it's just brilliant. And I see that and the way that it has shaped the culture of all of our campuses. And, you know, honestly, when you look at, you know, this is a church that's 46 years old. It was a boomer church. And I think the Care Center is one of those bridges to the next generation, this millennials, Gen Z. Because I think outreach is probably the new evangelism. You know, like, do you care about justice? Do you care about, care about your community? And I saw that as a huge opportunity because that was really in the DNA of this church. People loved it. I saw an opportunity in that I saw incredible goodwill. I was telling you this before we hopped on. Like, I, at one point I felt like Willow was probably the most prayed for church in America because I don't know of a church, of a pastor, including myself, that wasn't impacted in some way by the ministry of Willow. Like, everybody I meet wants to tell me their Willow story. Oh, I remember I was on that seat at that summit, or, you know, that sort of thing. And so there's just all these deposits that Willow's made into so many leaders like me, like you. And then when Willow goes through these challenges and it goes from, I mean, you keep talking about transition. I agree, transition, but it's a turnaround. I mean, it turnaround. Yeah. And people saw the trauma. They saw what was going on. And I've just had so many people reaching out. We're praying for you. We're cheering you on. And so I think, honestly, those prayers, they hold us up. They hold us up for sure. And then, if you want to get tactical, that's probably more spiritual, but you want to get tactical, the even though the budget and the attendance here, those big metrics, were in a free fall, the balance sheet was really strong, and these facilities were basically paid for. And, you know, I don't know much, I don't think we've connected a whole lot on our strategy in Michigan was we built community centers rather than church buildings. And so, you know, trillions of dollars of church real estate in the country, and it's used about 5% of its available time. So the stewardship of that just never made sense to me. So we built community centers that were open 7 days a week. They had missional businesses inside. So preschool, CrossFit, retail, food service, school for the arts, all these kinds of things. And I saw the opportunity that maybe, maybe the experience and the thing that we kind of stumbled into in Michigan would be something that would be helpful with Willow. And because the facilities were paid for, they were in strategic locations in the cities mm-hmm. that we serve, felt like that was a real good opportunity for us.
And some of the challenges?
Oh, well. I want to be real careful as we, I'm going to share these with you and with your listeners. And as I do, I've shared these before in some like workshop settings or at conferences and things. And so far, we've been able to get through it without people feeling this sort of like we want there's a lot of great things going on at Willow. Like, the Holy Spirit is not done with this place. So when I share these with you, I don't want you to feel like, man, there's complaining or anything like this. Like, let me just give you the real, just the sit rep, right? You're in the military. So I'm going to give you the sit rep of what we walked into, the situation report here. And here it is. So we walked in and, there was not just a change in senior pastor. There was a regime change. So 19 of the 20 top executive leaders were gone. There were probably 50 to 75 influential staff that had left. And so the vacuum that that then created often resulted in kind of battlefield promotions of people. I feel like I'm using a lot of military language here. Sorry about that.
It's working for me.
It's working for you. Okay, good. But, you know, these sort of battlefield promotions. And so, you know, it was just a real leadership culture Wild West. And, you know, then we had 2 years where there was no real senior pastor. There were interim, but those folks didn't really feel like they could, you know, set new vision or set new culture, wisely so. And so there was a lot of sort of, there was no king. And so everybody did what was right in their own eyes. And so that was going on. We had 8 new elders who they would tell you were in over their head. They'd never led at this level before. And, you know, if you know the story, all of the elders at Willow resigned at the same time. And then these new 8 were put into place. And so that was a dynamic. And I'd said earlier in the podcast, I said, you know, one of the fears or one of the concerns I had was them micromanaging. And, you know, I joke with them now. I'm like, and I was right. And they do. And but we are working through that really well. And it's really beautiful how those relationships are forming and that culture of that team is moving. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important to say, you know, the pendulum naturally swings side to side like that. So you knew this is something you could anticipate, but there's also a stewardship of leadership to go, okay, we're at the helm here and we can't make the same mistake twice. So we do have to lean in a little bit there. That could be unhealthy, but there's also parts of it. So, you know, I would compliment them in their leadership to say, yeah, it was probably necessary. And now's a great time to be reevaluating that kind of, it sounds like, in working through it, that what's really going to work for you, what's going to put wind in your sails for the long haul with that relationship. So, you know, in some ways I would compliment them. And I think it's wise just like, hey, this has to be on the front of our radar because it may be prudent now, but it's not going to work long-term for us.
Yeah. So, and you are absolutely right. The posture that we began to take, because we really kind of, you know, in some ways it's one of the largest church plants ever because we redesigned everything, like the all of the operating documents, mission, vision, values, all of those things. And the posture that we took as elders and senior pastor was, hey, let's design something that the next group could live with well. And then what was great about that is it kind of took the pressure off of the we-they dynamic. And we said, hey, what really works and what would protect the church long-term? What would be really healthy? But you're absolutely right. It was part of their job to make sure that some of those dysfunctions of the past didn't show up again. So,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you make the move. Did you feel like you were landing in the typical honeymoon season when you got there and you know were installed?
No. We had again. I don't want to be negative. We had the public scandal. I think everybody knew about. A lot of folks that would listen to this podcast probably familiar at least with you know that. We had lawsuits that were happening. It was a dozen different versions of the truth when it comes to, you know, the narrative and the history there. So that was an issue. 10 days after I arrived, George Floyd was murdered.
And I didn't realize the timing of that. Wow.
Yeah. So the racial tension that so many leaders were navigating, you know, that was tough for our entire country. And then, you know, I'm trying to do that, with no chips in the bank, with no trust built. Because the other dynamic for me was that I said hi to Willow. I was introduced to our staff over Zoom because the pandemic was in full swing. in 2020. And so, you know, what really needed to happen, I mean, it was on the top of my list every, you know, goals term that I set up, was always at the top of my list to build trust. And I'm trying to do that over Zoom calls. I can't eat with people. I can't just hang out with them. So the pandemic was another issue there. And then we had, you know, the decline at Willow didn't just start when that article came out and the scandal, those challenges there. There was really, if you look at the attendance, offering, those kinds of things, there was, it's really been in decline for 4, 5, 6 years before that, largely due to them trying to figure out succession. And there was at least that's what I'm gathering. I wasn't here, so I'm just trying to put the pieces together. But a lot of the folks that were here would say that they were just trying to figure out what was going to go on with that succession. And because of that, no one could really put a long-term vision or call people to, you know, the vision. And so there was this decline that was happening. And then, of course, when the scandal hit, attendance and offering just like a, you know, like a shelf. We had a lot of campus. We had basically 7 autonomous churches. And what I mean by that, again, I think most of the people listening to this podcast would get multi-site church. Willow was by design a very autonomous structure and style. And then when that founding leader was gone, there was even more freedom. And one of the things that the elders identified that they wanted when they were talking to me was they really wanted to see us try and align and bring those campuses back together. And, you know, if you've ever attempted to try and do that, that's always a tough, it can be a pretty bloody process. So we had some folks, you know, we had a lot of folks really frustrated about that. We've planted 5 churches since I've been here. The only problem is it wasn't on purpose. Because of those leaders. So, and then I'll just give you a couple more. One is we're 72% of our budget was staffing.
Oh, wow.
Ratio of 1 to 31.
Do you have a goal?
I think rule of thumb, a lot of times around 50. And, you know, I would, my last church, we try to run it around 45%. I think when you have a multi-site aligned vision, a lot of times you can run a little more lean. And we were at 45%. So 72% was tough. It was tough.
Yeah, that's super tough. I want to spend some time talking about that, actually, if you can take a minute. Because when I hear a church tell me that they're out of debt, the next question I ask them is, what's your percentage of your operating budget going to staff? Yeah. Because I feel like it frees up resources and they sort of kick their heels back and loosen up their belt a little bit. And it's like, well, we don't have to make that change there because we don't have to. And so we don't. And that gets perpetuated throughout the culture in a lot of different ways, but the staff budget, and ultimately that is less money in missions. It's less money just for your ministry. You know, as you talked about the care center and all those types of things, as that staff number increases, there's less money available for ministry. And it seems like I see this over and over again where it's like, but we love these people. And I'm like, yeah, but the mission of this organization is not to employ our staff, right? You know, we come here saying we're going to make sacrifices to be on this team. That's why I almost always start out with this idea of being called into ministry, you know, discerning the call versus deciding about a job. So would it be true to say that may have been a part of some things that kind of were out of balance, maybe led to some of the decline in prior years, and then that became something that was on your radar for righting the ship in the first, you know, 3 to 5 years of your leadership?
Yeah, for certain. And, you know, that is a really tough call anytime you have to make it. It's tougher still when you're looking at folks that, you know, over the last couple of years, we've had folks around here that that walked with us through the transition and stuck with us through those hard couple of years. And absolutely. And so it's really difficult when you're looking at people's names and their families and stuff. And I think it's difficult too, because you're making a decision where you're prioritizing the future, or very abstract things, like you're prioritizing the future, or you're prioritizing future campuses, or you're prioritizing the missions budget, or those kinds of things. And I mean, ultimately, I did prioritize those things. I mean, we have the money to burn and continue to be at 72-74%. But ultimately it came down to a stewardship decision, and how can we be as strategic with our dollars as possible for the kingdom. And I knew that we could grow a church and be a part of the movement with a leaner staff. And so, you know, yeah, it was one of those very, very difficult decisions to make. And then I think one of the new things for me is, goodness, when we're, is just the spotlight, right? So Willow's got this spotlight. So now I have a spotlight on me, and, you know, as a leader to be, you know, picked up, and now it's national news when I make those difficult decisions. And that's a hard thing to see. I mean, I was used to graphs that were up and to the right. And so some of these challenges are new challenges for me. And, but yeah, you're right. I wish that the hard decision, or that the right decisions, weren't so often the hard decisions. But the truth is that a lot of times the right decisions, they end up being the hard ones.
Yeah. I just affirm, you know, your viewpoint. I think, this is kind of tied to this, and it's thing I say often is every church is within 10 years of becoming a country club, because we pay our bills with insider money, and we make decisions around a table full of insiders. And businesses, they've got a model that forces them to bring people in. But churches, they don't. They have the Great Commission, but they don't have a financial model that forces them to do that. And they don't have a model of how decisions are made that are forced to do that. And so at the end of the day, it's up to leaders to put the church back on mission, meaning we're using insider resources to reach outsiders. And so every church is within 10 years, and it takes leadership. But that means you, every time you make those decisions for people who aren't here yet, you potentially highlight, you know, if you don't have a target on your back, you paint one. And if you've got one, you highlight it or shine a spotlight on it. And that's just heavy. That's part of the weight of leadership. And then, of course, you know, if you go through staffing changes with layoffs and realignment, you know, the next time you do anything to the building, like paint the walls or do a renovation, you know, you've got an arrow being chucked your direction. How could you lay off so-and-so last year and then spend money on new carpet this year? And man, it's just the position of a leader, the position of a leader. So thank you for sharing that part of that story, because it obviously has specifics that you brought up, but it also has a lot of generalities of making the tough decisions, looking to make the right decisions rather, that are almost always the tough decisions. So, well, let's turn to some fun stuff. Where have you guys seen, and I think this is really great timing. There's a sense, even though COVID's kind of spiking right now, most people it's kind of a runny nose or whatever when they get it. And there's a sense like, okay, like we're not, the human race is not ending here. There's light at the end of this pandemic tunnel. What are you guys seeing that's working really well? And I'm not saying this is a prescription for other churches. I'm just saying, like, where are you guys sensing some synergy, some momentum at Willow?
We've really done a lot of work on our culture as a staff team. That has been very, very rewarding. And I would love to, you know, share some just brilliant ideas on how to do it. But honestly, just the block and tackle kind of normal stuff that that we've done in the last year and a half, 2 years is just stuff that wasn't done here for some time. And, and I'm watching just the way people are lighting up. For example, like we, one of the things that they would say, a while ago is come prayed up. That was like part of the culture here was you pray on your own time and we're here to work, you know, and it's really corporate. And maybe there's a time and a season for that, but I also felt like, and maybe it's because they were going through such trauma when I got here, but I just really felt this hunger for just that basic koinonia, relational connection with each other and connection with God. And so we just said, hey, every Wednesday, we're going to get together and we're going to start our day with staff chapel. And it is for the purpose of connecting with God and each other. And, you know, as a, you know, a tactical guy, and this is like, you know, this is embarrassing probably for me to say this, but like anytime I see all of our staff gathered in one room, I just immediately think of how much money we're spending, right? Like all of these hours and all of these people. And I'm like, oh my goodness. But I can't tell you the return on investment that we've had by coming together as a staff and just worshiping together, just praying together, just playing together. That has gotten us just incredible returns. It's been, as soon as, you know, COVID was lifting and that sort of thing, being able to gather in person like that was just so rich, just such a beautiful thing. And in regards to building trust, as soon as we could get together like that, I saw people start, you know, sort of when I'd come into the room in the beginning, it just sort of felt like this, you know, with arms crossed. Now, when I come into the room, there's just a little more openness and there's just a lot more trust. And I'm enjoying that. And I think our staff is enjoying that. One of the things that we're doing right now that I am really enjoying is we have a real emphasis on growing younger. Like our average age, I don't have the stats in front of us, but is we're aging as a congregation. That was something very early on that we identified. And so we are watching, you know, we're kind of putting young leaders around leadership tables and in conversations and even on stage, maybe earlier than what would sort of typically be, you know, I think she's 27, 28, maybe. She's on our executive team. And she's killing it. You know, she brings such great ideas and such perspective. And I feel sorry for her because every time I have a question about Gen Z or, you know, some language basically that my high school student introduces me to, you know, I just go to her and I'm like, so what does that mean? You know, so she has a lot of responsibility trying to keep me relevant. But I think the growing younger piece has been great for us. And here's one that I'd love to mention, always with the caveat that we have so far to go, but, you know, Willow had been having the conversation around diversity for, you know, years before I got here. And then as soon as I got here, the George Floyd murder, and it just really amplified that conversation. And so we dug into it. We took a year. And we worked with World Vision. They had a program, May We Be One, and folks came out and kind of led us through that journey. And so that has been, again, just a really rich, we have a very diverse church and growing in its diversity, not just in the congregation or on stages, but around leadership tables. And that has been... That's just been a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I will say this, my daughter's 21, just graduated from Wheaton College. So proud of her. But you know, her generation, my generation, we would go check out a church. We'd want to see like, what's the music like? And then probably the millennials, they would go online and they would want to like check, you know, the music or the pastor or how it went. My daughter's generation is going straight to the leadership page and they want to see if there's diversity on that leadership team. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I just love the commitment to both diversity, theology of that generation. So anyway, those are some of the things that we're seeing.
I love that. I heard campus pastor or teaching pastor Sean Williams on your team talk about across your campuses, there was, you know, 40% was the number I remember him saying of some kind. And, you know, I think for where Willow's been, and which was probably, you know, at one point in time, an almost all white church, to putting some intentionality into the diversity conversation, trying to encourage other churches that direction. But at the end of the day, if you're not bringing them in to the decision-making table, then you're not going to have their insight and be able to reach people who have experiences like that person or the ethnicity and the family background that they have. Because we can know something about how they think, but we won't know how they think. And so we have to invite diversity around the decision-making table as church leaders. And yeah, there's great things about what is, you know, who's on your website, who's on your stage and those types of things, but it goes deeper into who's helping you make decisions. And you guys don't get to where you've gotten in a short period of time without being really intentional and stewarding that well. And I do believe it will be a picture of heaven. So I think that's a great yeah. topic to hit. So,
yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Dave, we've just scratched the surface on things I think we could dive into. And so I'd love to invite you back at another time, maybe every spring or something like that. We can catch up and next time I'll buy a plane ticket out and we'll film there and I'll take you out to lunch or something. But I appreciate your time and jumping on this call and investing into our audience. We're so fortunate. I thought I'd just have a few people dialing into this week to week and have just been blown away by the numbers and the growing influence that this podcast has. And we just love stewarding it and are so grateful that as we steward it, people like you invest in it alongside of us. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for what you do. It's been an honor.
Well, I hope that episode really fueled you. I hope it gave you some insights and some inspiration. And before I let you go, I want to circle back to our cohorts at The Ascent Leader. You can see all that we're doing at theascentleader.org. That's A-S-C-E-N-T, theascentleader.org. And you can follow us on social media, The Ascent Leader. Also, if you want to follow Dave on Instagram, his handle's Dave Dummett. That's two M's and two T's, Dave Dummett on Instagram. But the best work we do is the work we do in the living room. And this podcast is named after the core work that we do in our cohorts. And I would encourage you to hit us up at theascentleader.org and check out what's going on with our mentors, with our coaches, and upcoming cohorts. And I would encourage you to apply and get involved. Listen, if you want results that nobody else is getting, do what no other leaders are doing. Hope to see you in a cohort soon, theascentleader.org. Wow. Leaders, thank you so much for tuning in. We are just blown away by all the things that you guys tell us that this is doing to grow you and develop you. And I'll tell you what, if you feel like this is growing you as a leader, as a person, as a pastor, we would be honored if not only would you continue to listen, but if you would subscribe, if you would get on social and say something so that the people you have influence over can see the ways that this is benefiting you and that they would check us out as well. That would mean the world to us. Thank you so much for listening.